You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Ian, look at this.
Well, it's a police box. What on earth is he doing here? Hey, these things are usually on the street. I feel it.
You feel it? Faint vibration.
It's alive.
Earth Station Who, a fun mashup celebrating nearly 50 years of the Doctor Who universe. Hold tight. You never know where the TARDIS is going next.
You're probably a bit confused right now.
I broke the glass. It's all come back to me.
This. What is this?
That's my ship.
What?
Let me take it from the top. Hello. I'm the Doctor. I'm a traveller in space and time. And that thing buried down there is called a TARDIS. Time and relative dimension in space. You're gonna love this.
Hey there, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Earth Station Who podcast. That's right, folks, we are back, and we are going to be looking at the Fifth Doctor's era. We haven't actually done the Fifth Doctor in quite some time. And we're actually looking at the end of the Black Guardian saga. We are looking at Enlightenment. And you're going to be basically seeing ships in space. It'll be a lot of fun. And the reason I thought of this one, because they kind of talked on Doctor Who this last season about the Eternals and everything. The guys who were, you know, invading people's sleep and everything. And they kind of tie into it, into this episode. And then also, of course, the Celestial Toymaker. So it's interesting that, you know, we hadn't talked about this one. And it's an interesting story. And it's going to be a lot of fun to talk about with you guys. And, of course, we have our regular crew with us. So, of course, let's say a big howdy to Mr. Mike Gordon.
Howdy.
How are you, my friend?
I am peachy keen.
And Miss Mary Ogle is back with us also.
Hi, everybody. It is great to be here.
Ready for the dog days of summer, or as we like to call it, the long wait till Doctor Who?
The probably even longer than it was going to be before wait for Doctor Who.
Oh, God, yeah. BBC has announced, actually. It's the only news thing we even have close to any new news is that, you know, they're not going to be filming for quite some time because of the social distancing they're doing in the UK. So there is no new Doctor Who planned to be filmed even until at least what they're saying late fall at the earliest. And so that means we're probably not going to get new Doctor Who other than the holiday special until probably fall 2021 at the earliest.
Yeah, if we're lucky.
But so. We did. They did reveal what the title of the holiday special is.
Yes, and they actually got to show the slimmed down new look Dalek for 2021.
The Diet Dalek.
Exactly. What is the title, Mikey?
So you put me on the spot. I believe is it
you brought it up.
is it Revolution?
Yes.
Of the Dalek, is that right? Am I right?
I think so.
Let me look. Because I saw they actually did an interview. It was three of them. They had Matt.
Revolution of the Dalek Christmas special.
Yeah, the Jody, Matt, and David. All interviewed at the same time via Zoom or, you know, streaming, something like that. Mm-hmm. And they talked to him about a number of things. And at the very end, Jody revealed that she could, she said she was going to do it regardless, but of course that's bunk. she revealed the title of the new one. So, and that is, Revolution, right?
It is Revolution of the Daleks, and it's going to be January 1st, 2021.
Right. So, so that's cool. You know, it's Dalek. So
the sleeker new looking Daleks for the, you know, 2020s, you know, it's going to be awesome.
That's true.
Exactly. So it'll be very interesting. Either that or they just lost a lot of weight because of Corona. You know, it's possible.
It was fun seeing the three of them on I think it was IGN.com that they did the interview for. And it was fun seeing them interact. Also, to that end, recently on James Corden's show, he had both David and Jody on and had them answer questions. And they actually had a Make It at Home Doctor Who contest. It was awesome. Which was really fun too. I love watching the various actors and actresses that have played the Doctor interact now, because they definitely have a kinship and all get along, and it's great. They have great chemistry together. If we could get a multi-Doctor story again, it would be a blast.
That would be awesome.
Very much so. I think it would be awesome. And some of these costumes these people came up with, it was awesome. There was one of them who was a podcaster. You could tell by his voice and the microphone he was using, but he ended up being the face of Boa.
It was you, wasn't it?
No. It was not. I would not actually put a plastic pot over my head and, you know, say I was the face of Boa or anything. But the one woman who was the who did the Cybermen was awesome and everything. She took I think it was a frame from her I think one of her a fan or something like that.
Like a
Dyson fan, and then she put tinfoil in front of her face and with little black eyes on it, and she was wearing a gray sweatshirt. It was cute. And one of their employees, of course, for the show actually said he was an ood and he had spaghetti coming out of his mouth. So it was a lot of fun.
It was fun. I don't watch James Corden was probably the one of all the James and Jimmys and all that are doing late night that I watch the least. But I mean, he is British, so he does have an affinity for Doctor Who. Heck, he was on two episodes of Doctor Who, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Both in the Matt Smith era.
So, and oddly enough, Matt was the one he didn't have on his show.
Oh, he's had Matt on before.
Yeah, I know. I would say, I know we've talked about, some of the stuff that BBC has put out for lockdown. So nothing official, I don't think, since we last did an episode. But that that stuff that came out with those two interviews, I definitely recommend people seek out, because it was very entertaining. And it's fun just watching those guys interact. Even if it is from a Zoom like screen, like we all do.
Oh, you know what? That's how most interviews are doing it nowadays. Other podcasts who usually have like face-to-face interviews are doing, Zoom or Skype or different ways to talk to the people. Look at something like Mark Maron. He's interviewing people completely over Zoom, and it's like, oh, he's just like us now,
Well, the benefit is that now you can, it's easier to do. Look at all the reunion Zoom sessions that we're getting, because it's easier to get all these people together via Zoom than it would be to actually physically get them in a location. So you can have like three or four doctors, together on a Zoom call, just like you can have, I think they've done Back to the Future reunion and X-Men and
Ghostbusters,
Ferris Bueller and Ghostbusters. And yeah, mm-hmm. they that's the thing that they're all kind of doing now, because it's a lot easier to do that now. And it's fun. I think it's a lot of fun.
I think it's pretty darn awesome.
See, and not everything about COVID is bad.
No, exactly. And if anyone wants to do a reunion on our show, we would be glad to do that for you. Heck, we could even bring back podcasters, hosts of past Earth Station Who. Have an Earth Station Who reunion. You never know what we could do with that. Could be a lot of fun, though. So you never know. But yeah, it's pretty awesome. Our friends at Big Finish announced that David Tennant is doing another Doctor Who adventure on Big Finish. And he's meeting up with River Song.
Yay!
So we get more River Song.
It's not part of that. It's not part of her series. So we don't hear the River Song theme.
Please let us not hear the River Song music.
Oh, come on. I could play it for right now for you guys if you really want.
Then we'd have to kill
we
you.
We really don't want. Yeah.
Okay. I do
you'd
like
need to die.
Yeah.
Never. Never, ever, 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 ever. But yeah, it's pretty darn awesome that, you know, they're doing, you know, new Doctor Who stuff with the new series now. And it's pretty awesome that, you know, both Alex Kingston and David Tennant, they had great chemistry in Silence in the Library.
Oh, so. Yeah.
Absolutely.
This is going to be great.
That was the beginning of it. You know, I mean, now I think... As far as existing and living actors that have played the Doctor, I think the only one that she will not have interacted with will be Nine. And maybe, you know, that would be a big deal, right? You know Chris is going to do some big finish at some point.
Well, you hope, but Chris is so damn unpredictable with anything he's going to do.
Yeah, I mean, who knows?
You just don't know where he's going to go, what he's going to say, what he's going to do. You know, I hate Doctor Who. I hate Doctor Who. Oh, but I'll go to these cons and say hi to the fans. You know.
Well, you know, all they should do is just say, you know, it's like, no, I hate Doctor Who. I hate Doctor Who. Oh, I get to work with Alex Kingston. I'm in.
Well, that would be very true. You know, definitely.
You just have to have your priorities straight.
Exactly. That's you just have to have the right carrot to dangle.
Exactly.
And it's an Alex Kingston carrot. So a carrot with really
There's
curly
just
hair.
There's so many ways we could go with that. So
sure it is.
Wow. Okay. Anyway, so.
And this, we haven't even got to the episode yet, and already we are devolving.
Oh, I know. But that should be coming to you in 2021 also. So, because did we talk about the Rory Williams adventure?
I don't think so.
They're also doing a adventure with Arthur Darvill returning as Rory Williams, and they're going to be setting it during the 2000 years that he waited for Amy.
There's a lot of opportunities for stories there.
Yeah.
Well, it's going
to
be interesting because, especially because he was the plastic Rory at that point. He wasn't even, you know, human. So they could definitely do adventures, you know, with him, you know, being a little more than human. So it should be very interesting. So the Centaurian will return, and that is coming in May 2021. So we got a long wait. But, you know, with us, we'll be ready for it because, you know, we have not done, you know, anything through 2021. And I don't think we're going to be getting Doctor Who. So we're going to be desperate to talk about by that point.
Yeah, it's going to be a while before we get the TV show back.
Yeah,
exactly.
Outside of the the aforementioned holiday special, we probably won't see Doctor Who till 2022.
Ooh.
Yeah. Well, I won't be surprised.
Yeah. No. I doubt we'll have new Doctor Who. Outside of that, maybe another holiday special ish, but.
The Zoom holiday special.
But I think it would be very optimistic to think that we're going to get new Doctor Who before 2022. Sorry.
Well, maybe our friends at the Puppet Doctor can, you know, maybe do something.
Take up the slack.
So just like, you know, in the Wilderness Years, Wilderness Years, when Big Finish steps up and fills the gap, it seems like what they're doing now.
Oh, very much so. And I think they're doing a grand job of it. So it's pretty awesome with that.
Yeah, they're coming out with new stuff right and left.
And, you know, we've still got a lot of Doctor Who that we have not reviewed here. So so we're good for a while.
Yeah. Didn't you make a list up or something of what we haven't reviewed yet?
I have a spreadsheet. Yes, I have a spreadsheet that tracks all such things. Yes.
So you went all the way from the beginning and all the way through current and marked what we've reviewed and such?
That's correct.
Wow, you do have a lot of free time on your hands.
Well, you know. So yes, I think I've been working on that. And I think episode 250 will be a good one to talk about some of the things that we've done and go over that.
Okay. I think that's totally fair.
Coming up, I mean, 250 episodes we're coming up on. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I can't believe we've been talking to each other for that long about Doctor Who.
Well, yeah. Yeah. I mean, well, Mike, you and I go longer than that. I mean, we've been talking for about Doctor Who and reviewing Doctor Who episodes for 10 years, over 10 years almost.
Oh, I know. And it's amazing that, you know, it's like Earth Station Who was like birthed out of us talking too much Doctor Who on Earth Station One. And people right. were kept on saying, do you mind not talking about Doctor Who all the time?
But what's wrong with them?
Yeah, I know. That was crazy. We shouldn't have catered.
No, we didn't. So, we had met that weird guy, Phantom Troublemaker, you know, a guy who was wearing a wrestling mask all the time. But now he's known as Dave and he doesn't do that anymore. So it's pretty awesome. But it's pretty cool. And the rest is history. And we've had such a great experience and we've had a lot of great people on it. And we've have Mary as a wonderful co-host.
Absolutely. So
pretty awesome.
I am so happy to be here.
Yeah, she's got a lot of catching up to do. She's going to, you know, review with us all the ones that we've, you know, the backlog of ones that we've done without
her. Yeah, exactly. She has to go back and talk about each one of the first 100 episodes.
That's what her homework will be for episode 250. Right?
Exactly.
But she has to
give us talk about every single episode I wasn't on before.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Exactly. So it'll be very interesting to see what people think about it. And, you know, episode 250 is going to be good to talk about that kind of stuff and just reminisce a little bit. I think it'd be good. So I think we definitely would love to hear from you guys at home. How are you guys doing? Please write us. You know, we got a piece of mail that we'll talk about at the end of the show, but we definitely would love to hear from the rest of you too. So, you know, please write us at earthstationwho@esonetwork.com. Let's take a quick break and we are going to be back in a moment and we are going to be talking all about enlightenment.
I'm Brittany Vitrino.
And I'm Martha Bartlett. We've been nerds since day one, and we love to talk.
And now we're your hosts of But First, Let's Talk Nerdy.
Come listen if you like anything from comics, anime, video games, sci-fi, and even history.
Just sit back, relax, even join us with a drink in hand, because we'll have one in ours too, and come talk nerdy with us every Tuesday.
We are now a proud member of the ESO Network, and you can download wherever you like to listen.
See you next Tuesday.
Welcome back to Earth Station Who, and now we are going back to March 1st, 1983, and we are looking at a four-part episode featuring the Fifth Doctor with Tegan and the wonderful Turlough, and it's going to be interesting to do because this is, what, our third time we've talked about Turlough or fourth time? Because I think we've done King's Demons, and we also did the Dalek story.
Yes.
And then we did, of course, Modern Undead when they introduced him. So,
I know I haven't seen a lot of him.
Well, you don't see a lot. He's not on all that long. Oh, he is on the five Doctors, too.
Right, right.
So we had...
That's true. Yeah, I mean, I'm familiar with him to an extent. And I know, but I haven't seen all the episodes that he's in. And his whole, like, you know, the whole angle that he's working for, you know, the Black Guardian was something that I kind of knew because I'd read it in places and people had mentioned it, but I had never really seen it, the evidence for myself until this episode.
Oh, we also did Fury from the Deep also.
Hmm.
Yeah. So with the base under siege story again. Right. So it's interesting because you get a story and they actually don't reveal that they're actually in space until, what, the second episode.
Right.
I think.
Yeah, and, well, you kind of figure it out.
Yeah. But, you know, is this, you know, what? So this, Mike, was your first time seeing this one?
Yep, this is my first time.
Okay, what about you, Mary?
I have seen it before eons ago.
Right.
All I remembered was there were ships and Borg gods.
That sounds about right. There you go with that. It was interesting because, you know, it's probably been at least 25 years since I've seen this one. I have the box set. And this is one of those where they actually redid the special effects back in 2009. They actually redid it. And since CGI was so much better, they basically decided to redo a lot of the effects for it. Didn't really help, but, you know.
The effects weren't really that bad.
No, I didn't. I actually thought they were not bad at all. I mean, obviously, you know, I mean, they are what they are, but I didn't, I thought they were kind of cool looking in a lot of cases. So.
Mm-hmm. No, it was interesting because you had some very interesting characters in the Guardians of, you know, you had the White Guardian, the Black Guardian, and something was draining the power from the TARDIS right at the very beginning. And it was obvious this was, you know, something was building because they had called it a trilogy at the time when it first aired. And so, you know, you had the episode before in Terminus where Nyssa actually left the series. Not that it was really noticed in some ways.
Poor Nyssa.
And it's sad because Nyssa was such a great character. And she could have been a great character.
Yeah, well, they had the problem of having like too many people in the TARDIS. And they did that with, you know, when there were three of them. And then they got rid of Adric. And it was like, okay, there's two. And then it wasn't terribly long after that, I don't think, that Turlo came. So it was like, oh, there's three again. And so I think this story actually benefits from having just two companions really well in a lot of the ways that some of the other Fifth Doctor stories don't, because of how you have to juggle all three of those. Whereas this one, it's really simple. I mean, you know, Tegan's got her storyline, Turlo's got his, and the Fifth Doctor's just mulling about. And I think it actually works really well. And I actually think it was directed really well too. I noticed it right in the beginning, as you mentioned, Mike, the ship's being drained, and the effect, the lighting effect that they used of sort of the dark TARDIS with the, you know, the yellow round things, or the, you know, the dimly lit TARDIS was, it just added like an element, a really cool atmosphere to the TARDIS that, that I really enjoyed seeing. I hate, one of the things about, you know, HD now is that when you see these older episodes and you see the TARDIS, the same set that they've been using for at that point, what, 20, 30 years, it just looks nasty. Mm-hmm. It looks like, I'm like, why didn't they clean this?
Where's housekeeping?
Exactly. It just looks, you know, I just look at the round things and they just look like they've got, I mean, they're just dirty and you can just see it like, but with that lighting effect, you got rid of that. And it just looked, I don't know, it looked really cool to me. Kind of much like we see in later desktops of the interior of the TARDIS, I think.
Well, exactly. It, you know, with it being mood lighting and everything, it kind of, you know, the look and feel of it, not the console or anything, but just the look of the TARDIS reminded me somewhat of the 9th and 10th Doctor's TARDIS.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And so it was very interesting. And it would have been great if they could have kept it like that, because it felt more real. It felt more legit. Instead of something stark white and, you know,
it felt less like a set.
Well, exactly. Yeah. It felt like an actual ship, like, right. You know, that, you know, you don't have it, you know, let's waste all our power on brightening the control room, you know.
Well, I mean, it would have looked a heck of a lot better if it was clean when it was, you know, well lit. So, but yeah, I right away I was like, oh, this is cool. And, you know, I kind of dig, pirate stories. So, I like the idea of like this whole like pirate race or ship race in space. It seemed like sort of, I don't know, a little steampunkish, for Doctor Who.
Oh, very much so.
And very, I know this is, you know, neither here nor there, but I was very pleasantly surprised that this is a classic Doctor Who story that's both written and directed by women. And that doesn't happen very often.
No. Fiona Cumming directed it and Barbara Clegg wrote it. It was
pretty awesome. I mean, that's got to be pretty, like, that list has got to be pretty small. If I don't even know if we've noticed it. That's been the case for anything else that we've, any other classic story, has it been?
I don't really think
so. I know that was the first one.
Right.
That was both written and directed by a woman.
Gotcha. Yeah, because I know they each had worked on Doctor Who separately, but not together.
Yeah.
And so,
I read that, you know, that Eric Seward rewrote a lot of it, but still.
Details.
Yeah, well, Barbara Clegg didn't even know about the black and white guardian thing until after she'd already submitted her script.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think that's not, yeah, all that stuff is what Seward entered or added to it. But
yeah, let me just tell you, you know, having the bad guys and the good guys have birds on their heads was just a brilliant idea. You know,
as you do.
Yeah, as you do.
And, you know, Valentine.
I kept thinking of Good Omens.
Oh, very much so. But it was interesting because Valentine is such an imposing character. You know, the actor who played the Black Guardian. He was just the voice. And, you know, he was just so good as the bad guy. And, you know, you'll die, Turlo. You know, you know, and it was just awesome. And, you know, you'll spend eternity here. And he was just so menacing. And then to see the bird on his head just took away from it completely.
I had the opposite reaction. He was so over the top that he kept taking me out of the story. Because I thought it was actually fairly well written.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it had a decent plot. I thought the ships in space was a cool idea.
Mm-hmm.
But he just tended to go overboard, in my opinion, in his acting choice.
It was interesting, though, because there was, you know, I thought the casting was really well done. From the pirate captain, who was awesome. She was pretty amazing.
Did you know that she is the one who sang the song in The Gunfighters? She sang The Last Chance Saloon.
No.
Now how do you feel about her?
I still think she's much better as the pirate queen.
Yes. Thank God she had something else to do.
Glad she didn't burst into song during this.
Oh, no, she was too evil to do that.
But she was having fun, you could tell.
Oh, yeah. It was a fun role for her to play. But I liked the Eternals who were on the doctor ship. And, you know, they're very prim and proper. And the one who was totally falling for Tegan.
Oh, he was creepy.
Even she was so turned off by him. But it was cool. It gave the Eternals some sort of, I don't know, something that you could sort of hold on to. They weren't just these sort of entities that, you know, you couldn't really relate to. I thought that because most of the other ones, well, at least the main captain of was the one they were on the Buccaneer, right?
Yes.
That one, I mean, he was just like, you know, pretty boring. So to give the other Eternals some personality, I thought helped. I actually, you know, I'm not a huge Tegan fan, but I thought Janet and Tegan had like a lot to do. Like I said, it doesn't suffer because you don't know what to do with all these companions. So you've got Tegan and she's got her plot, and it, you know, she doesn't seem like somebody who's, at one point in the beginning, she's like driving the TARDIS. I didn't know she could do that. That really surprised me when, you know, and she's like talking about the TARDIS, like driving or piloting the TARDIS in terms of like of you know, in terms that like she understands it. And I was like, wow, I had no idea she had even any interest in
that kind of thing. She's the same one who landed the TARDIS on its side in Castrovalva. Just remember that.
Well, she's
had practice, right?
She's learning.
Yeah,
she's learning. And Turlough, like, I haven't seen enough of his episodes, so I don't know. I mean, it's hard for me to get a handle on him because, you know, that this story, it starts off with whatever he did in the last one, which I haven't seen. So I know, shame on me. But, you know, obviously he must have done something that so the doctor looks at him as very cowardly. And yeah, he doesn't quite, you know, he's not really brave in this one. He's tormented through most of the story. And unfortunately, when he, you know, kind of makes the decision to stay with the doctor, I don't know, it didn't really feel like a feel-good Turlough moment. It just kind of was weak. So I don't know if that's the way, I think that's just the way the character, I don't want to blame Mark Strickson for that, but, you know, he doesn't do a lot for me so far. Let's put it that way. I don't know if his character gets better, but
yeah, he was a Weasley little character.
He was supposed to be right from the very beginning. He was like, can you really trust him? You know, he was always the cowardly person who would not ever go into battle or anything. He was always the one trying to send other people to their deaths or just trying to get away from everything.
Yeah, he ran away a lot.
Exactly.
or tricked other people into going.
They make a big deal about, like, you know, the doctor makes a big deal like, you know, I'm going to trust him to do the right thing here because what he's planning is, you know, but whatever he was planning to do, I don't think really worked. So I didn't get the feeling that, oh, Turlough came through in the end. I mean, obviously he did because he sided with the doctor, but I don't know if that was, you know, I think that was just more for his survival rather than anything else. I just didn't like, yeah, I'm the jury's still out on Turlough for me anyway. I haven't really seen an episode that or story that really has made me connect with him one way or another, to be honest with you.
There's only one episode that I really actually connected with him, and it was his last one. It was the Planet of Fire, I think it was called. And he's just not a great character. He's been in a couple Big Finish, and they actually did a novel about him. And so I know it was during the in-between years, but they, you know, wrote a story about, did an adventure with Turlough and such.
So I don't know much about him. I imagine, as far as I know, he's still alive, but I have not seen him. Does he do conventions or anything like that?
He's done, you know, like Gallifrey and stuff like that a couple times.
I don't think I've ever seen him on any of the documentaries or anything like that. Like, I don't know, is he hard to reach or does he not care for this Doctor Who stuff? Or
I know he's Australian and I think he lives in either Australia or New Zealand.
So he's just a little harder to reach.
Yeah, but he's been on, like, I was reading watching the extras for this and he's up there. And
okay,
so it's just his character.
It's kind of a thankless character.
Yeah, pretty much.
I mean, he's very flawed and he's not very likable.
So a lot of the companion story this year were kind of that way.
Well, that's true. And,
it's like
and
the whole Mark.
And
John Nathan Turner.
Well, I mean, I think it's, you know, anybody who's listened to us knows that, you know, this is not my favorite era. The John Nathan Turner era is not my favorite time period to watch these stories. But I will say, you know, recently I got a chance to, I was invited to be on Watchathon with Rassilon over there on the ESO network. And we did, we reviewed The Visitation, which is a Fifth Doctor story, which I actually liked as well. And this one, I went going in thinking, oh, this is, you know, their Fifth Doctor. I don't think I'm going to, and I actually quite liked it. So, I don't know if I'm just getting, like, becoming gentler in my criticisms with this era, or or if I, you know, I'm beginning to see that, you know, it's not all bad, but,
Tonight we will have a kinder and gentler Mike Gordon.
Cause I'm, like I said, I'm not a big Tegan fan. Usually she annoys me. And I think my favorite story of hers is her last one. But then again, I haven't seen a lot of these. So, right. You know, I thought she was really pretty good in this one, actually. And, I mean, she spends most of the time, fighting off, whatever that, the eternal,
creepy
that's
guy.
Like the creepy eternal Mariner. Guy.
Yeah, it was interesting. You know, the very first time you see him on the video screen of the TARDIS, you see his hands. And he's like climbing up. I thought I was watching a Talking Heads video at first. You know,
it's like, I'm like, moving.
Yeah, exactly. I started seeing it. It's like, who are these beautiful ways? Who is this? You know, my God, what have I done here? You know, it almost felt like that. And then, you know, just him like looking into the view screen, and it was just like, oh, this is creepy. And they just, it was just weird that he feels for her. She's like no other brain he's ever seen before. It's like, oh, whatever.
And he plays the creepy guy well, I will say that.
It's like every time she turns around, there he is. He's like, I'll go with you here. It's like, yeah.
Yeah, but and he did a David Tennant at the end. I don't want to go. You're going. And it was pretty interesting. And I did enjoy, you know, a lot of it. I loved the shots of like when the boats were going up against each other. And I just thought it was just neat to see.
Yeah. It, I mean, like you said, had pretty good models of the boat.
Oh, exactly.
It was so funny though. Cause they have, you know, they spend the first episode or two, like, you know, they talk about how they have to suit up and go out on the deck, you know, in order to do things. And then, you know, by the time our characters go on the deck, they're like, oh, it's okay. You can just lift up your helmet. That's it's fine. And I'm like, well, why do they even need like to have suits on? It's like, they made this big deal about pressurized suits. And I'm like, why do they even need them?
It was out of an abundance of caution.
I truthfully, if you remember though, when like the doctor had the jewel and everything, when he ran out without the spacesuit on or anything, he actually felt the pressure. He was like collapsing and everything. But he was able to throw it over the side in time.
I think you are. I think you are projecting a lot on Peter Davison's performance.
Hey, I'm trying. I am trying, my friend. Come on, I'm trying to give this a little oomph.
You know, and I have to say too, I wish I'd remembered that, because when you said at the beginning that you picked this episode because, you know, we recently have seen the Eternals in Jodie's run, and I was like, oh yeah, like I was like, okay. So because watching this one, I had no connection with that story at all either. So
there is,
I don't
no,
know,
it's just by name.
There is no connection, yeah.
Because they don't even bring up the Celestial Toymaker or anything like that in this.
Well, did they in that episode with Jodie?
Yes.
Okay, gotcha.
So they went like, if only the toy maker was here. So
gotcha. So they're tying all, so that story tied in this one with the toy maker.
But this, they tied this one in because they were internals. That gotcha. Was the only way.
Yeah, I mean, that was it. That yeah. was the only connection.
Gotcha. It was kind of cool. You know, I kind of remember seeing the, you know, obviously the black and white Guardians are a big deal for the Key to Time, which we reviewed last year. And that's kind of what I remember seeing them.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And this is the last time you see them in the story.
Gotcha. At all. Have they ever been mentioned again? I mean, I'm certainly
Big Finish. Look at them. Yeah. Big Finish has done a lot with them, but they never brought them up, you know, at all. Heck, even our friend Rich Morris did, when he did the 10 Doctors
right
storyline, that, you know, that they, you know, the White and Black Guardian were behind a lot of it, what was going on in his story, but not anything on the TV show.
It's cool to have you know, I would, the concept of the White and Black Guardians, I think would be pretty cool to reintroduce. I think, you know, having these celestial beings that are kind of, you know, playing with mortals, or, you know, playing with the universe or whatever. We've seen that in other science fiction stories, comics and whatnot, like really be kind of interesting. And I would love to, I wouldn't mind seeing them come back in some way.
I think it would be a great idea.
Yeah.
And you know, it'd be great to see Chibnall ruin them. It'd be perfect.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wasn't going to go there.
But yeah, I but definitely would like to.
I'm not arguing. I'm just going to go on there.
But yeah, it would be, I think they're great characters for to come back and everything.
Well, provided somebody did something cool with them. Yes. I, you know, I mean, yeah. That's the caveat, right? But I like the concept. I think, you know, I kind of wish we'd seen, and I guess I still could in some ways, but I wish I'd seen this trilogy in order now, just because I kind of feel like seeing it, you know, out of order is just kind of maybe not been as effective as a story, you know. No. But because I really, even though it'd been so, you know, it'd been a long time since we saw Modern Undead, that I barely remember that they were in that. So this was the this to me was the White versus Black Guardian story mm-hmm. for me, and you know, it was I don't know how. It's kind of a shame that at the end that the whole thing with the Eternals and the Enlightenment and all that kind of stuff kind of just ends. It just sort of like kind of gets co-opted by the White and Black Guardians. It would have been interesting to see what that story, how that would have played out without them.
Mm-hmm. Well, truthfully, you never really even see what happens to the pirate and her crew. You just see the Doctor and Turlo come back. Oh, we took care of them.
Well, you do see two figures floating in the space.
Yeah, I mean, the implication is that they get thrown overboard. Yeah.
But they're fine. They're Eternals, so they'll be fine.
Yeah, they're just going to bounce back.
They're just going to disappear into the Eternal net.
Exactly. Or we'll see them in a Marvel movie very soon.
Right.
Yeah. Not those Eternals.
Okay. Just making sure. You know, that's why how they're bringing the Doctor into the Marvel universe. It'd be awesome.
It's been a one long game plan
all along. MCU since the 70s. But yeah, it was interesting. And was it fun to rewatch? Yes, it was. And I think, you know, the characters, especially the Doctor and his companions, were great. And I didn't think, you know, it was, you know, they were very sexist, of course, to Tegan. You stay here. We'll go take the adventure. Don't leave the TARDIS. And of course, she leaves the TARDIS, you know, and, you know, she, you know, you don't go over to this party. I'm going to go. No, Doctor. And she actually stood her ground, and she looked great in that dress. The dress to go to the ball.
Yeah, I actually thought this was definitely one of the better storylines for Tegan. I mean, she actually got to do something.
Mm-hmm.
She got to do a lot.
Yeah,
she got to stand there frozen for half an episode. It was awesome. So yeah, it was an interesting storyline. They didn't really talk about once you saw the crew of the Buccaneer go up on the deck. I don't think you saw them again or anything. You know, after the guy was saying, I don't trust that rum. Here, take the key, you know, and it's just like.
Oh, like, yeah. Well, we saw them disappear, I think, when the race was over. There was no point to have them. So
right. I think they disappeared somewhere in episode two or something.
Yeah. Yeah, that didn't. You're right. That didn't. All those characters.
They didn't go anywhere.
Right. Yeah. That's why I wish it kind of we'd gotten to, you know, have the storyline play out and then have the Black and White Guardians like show up in the last part of the last act after the contest was over. You know, that probably would have worked a little bit better for me. But But and I wanted to also talk about the Fifth Doctor here for a little bit, because we really haven't talked about him. And you know, it amazes me how cranky the Fifth Doctor is, considering that Peter Davison really, you know, seems like, you look at pictures of him and everything like that, and he seems like the most casual, like the nicest and most courteous doctor that there would be. And I'm constantly amazed that he's like a jerk.
he's kind of a dick. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
And I'm granted, you know, I've always thought that, you know, he didn't have the best companions, but he doesn't, man, he just doesn't give them any slack whatsoever. And yeah, he just acts like they're a pain in the butt to be around. And I kind of wonder why he has them, because it just...
Yeah, he's always screaming at him about something.
Yeah, he's always saying he doesn't trust them, or he doesn't, you know, feel that they're competent to do this or that, or, you know, he rolls his eyes constantly whenever they show up. It just doesn't feel like there's a connection with him and his companions whatsoever. And I don't know. I mean, I know Hartnell's Doctor gets the rep for being the crankiest doctor, but I don't know. And the more I see the Fifth Doctor, I'm like, he might be worse. He's more interested in like changing out his celery in this episode than he is with.
Well, it did need to be changed.
Yeah, you know,
it was pretty sad.
It was looking kind of brown on the edges, you know, and stuff like that. And they don't ever reveal that why he has the celery until his final episode, too.
I mean, Turlough goes overboard and he doesn't even care. Like, he just, like, it seems like Turlough's going to die. And then when he does reunite with Turlough on the other ship, it's like he doesn't even care, like, why he did that. Like, it's like, why did you throw yourself into space? I kind of would like to know. And he has no interest in these characters at all. And it just leads me to wonder why he's with his companions.
Well, exactly. You know, Turlough basically tried to commit suicide in this.
Oh, yeah. That's exactly what happened.
Well,
yeah.
That's like the way he reacts when Adric dies. He's like, yeah. Oh. No, well, we'll just have to move on.
Exactly.
I'm constantly amazed by his treatment of his companions. So he seems to treat his enemies and other supporting characters better than he treats his own companions.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And it's just like, Peter. Hey, that's kind of the way he treated his interviewers too when we met him in person. Just saying, but you know. But it was very interesting to see. Did you guys enjoy this? It didn't feel like it lagged at all in the storyline. And
it was fun to watch. It was entertaining. Mm-hmm.
I enjoy this. It's weird because, like you said, Mike, there's not a lot of story here, and it doesn't really drag. Like it was over with before I knew it, and I was kind of surprised because there's not a lot of story, and it didn't feel padded. So good for them.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So definitely interested to hear what, you know, folks at home thought about this one. Any final thoughts before we go ahead and rate this? Talking about padding,
I as Mary pointed out in the beginning, I don't know how enlightened I feel after this, but
yeah.
Well, exactly.
It almost felt like it was, the whole thing was set up to, you know, find out what Turlough was going to do at the end.
Yeah, because
it seemed like Eric Sayward injected that into the story.
Yeah,
very much. Yeah, so. Because it didn't. They were searching for enlightenment, but, you know, nobody really got it. And then there's sort of this off, you know, the doctor, I think, points out that, you know, that Turlough gets it, but, and he acts like that was the point of it all along, but I'm like, that doesn't hold up. So I think I think what happened was that the script editor changed the script too much that it just kind of got muddy at the conclusion.
No, definitely.
And I would love to read Barbara's original treatment of this.
Mm-hmm.
She did write a novelization of it, but I think it follows the episode
pretty closely,
which is too bad.
Yeah, gotcha.
Yeah, it's interesting because Barbara actually based the Eternals on some of her wealthy relatives.
Oh, yeah, I read that. That was hilarious.
Too. That was really funny.
They wanted to be constantly entertained.
Exactly. It's just like, okay. It's like, it's almost like being about around a lot of little kids, but you know, these are adults who have to be entertained. So it's just like, oh man, this is crazy. All right, kids. Let's rate this 1 out of 5 TARDISes, 1 being the worst, 5 being the best. Mary, you got to go first this time.
Let's see. I mean, I think some of the acting in this was not as great as it could have been by some of the side characters, and frankly, even by Peter Davidson, who kind of it just felt to me like he was walking through and mouthing the words and didn't really care that much about what was going on. But it's still, it was, you know, it's well written, and the special effects are actually kind of fun, and it was enjoyable. And the lady pirate captain is good, and she didn't sing.
Thank God.
So I would, you know, I think I'll give it 3.5.
Okay, that's fair. Mikey.
3.5 for me as well. I can't quite give it 4, but it's above average, for Doctor Who, especially for this period, where I feel like I'm like, whenever we do one of these stories during the John Nathan Turner, era, I'm like driving through a minefield. I feel like it's just gonna like, and the one's gonna blow up and I'm gonna be like, ugh. But this one I was kind of surprised I made it through, and there was some really cool, as Mary said. But I love the concept of the ships having this race. The Eternals were kind of cool, and you know, I like the concept of the White and Black Guardians. The companions I think were more impressive than the Doctor in this one. I agree with Mary on that too. So I don't think. You know, this is not one that I would just throw at someone and say, you've never watched Doctor Who before? Take a look at this.
Then they never watch it again.
Yeah. I don't think they would never watch it again, but it just wouldn't be the best foot forward. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Well, totally understand. Damn, I hate agreeing with you guys. Damn. Because, no, it's not a subpar episode by any means. So it's above 3, but it's not quite 4.
Right.
So, yeah, 3.5. We're all going to have to agree on this one. Damn it. So, you know, I wonder if somebody at home could go back and listen to all our old episodes and tell us what we rated for each episode.
There's the homework for 250.
Exactly. Come on.
For episode 250, like, let us know what our rating system was for everything.
We definitely would love to hear, and also find out who was on each show. Mike can give you that off the spreadsheet. So
yeah, I can tell you who the guests were, but I don't have the ratings on my spreadsheet.
So that means you just have to listen to the last 5 minutes of each episode.
Yeah. Go Mike, go back and listen to every single one.
Exactly. Starting with episode 1.
Yeah. Like I don't even know if those are available, are they?
Somewhere. Probably on my
Somewhere.
Somewhere. I think actually you might be able to find it on the ESO Network website and everything. And I'm going to be the first one to mention this. By the end of the year, there will be an Earth Station Who website completely dedicated to Earth Station Who. I just have to find the time to do that.
Well, it only took us 10 years to get one for Earth Station 1. So.
Exactly. So you go.
You're still on schedule. See,
you're still ahead of the game.
Yeah, you are.
I am, but I only have like 70 episodes of the 500 up there. So I still got a lot of work to do on that too. But with that being said, we definitely would love to hear from you guys at home. Please write us at earthstationwho@esonetwork.com. We also did get a piece of email, and our friend Bill Lamond actually wrote us again. And he is talking about his 12 favorite Doctor Who episodes of the last decade. And he said, "Hi, Whovians. First, thank you for pronouncing my last name so carefully. I realize my family is asking everyone to do something that doesn't make as much sense. It really looks like lemon, but with a D at the end. Again, we say it's so that it rhymes with the and meters with the pond. So it's Lamond. Yeah, like I've been saying. All right, I got it right. Finally, I got a last name right.
Take Let's the win.
Mark it on the calendar, June 30th, 2020. I listened again to your most recent episode at home this time. This allowed me more attention, and it's always easier for me to pause when I know I have to do something distracting. I like all your choices for favorites. There was something going to work out no matter what, because I have a difficult time picking out my favorites. For health reasons, I strongly seek out comedy, so the 11th Hour with Matt Smith is a favorite. I haven't thought of better episodes for introducing someone to Doctor Who for the first time. I'd love to hear your suggestions.
Okay.
We could do that. Any thoughts, guys? What we do? Well, we always tell people, if you're going to watch the new series, we always recommend Rose as a good starting point.
I would recommend starting with a certain doctor. Like
right.
Usually the start of a doctor is the start of a, like, kind of a brand new chapter in the Doctor Who, you know, franchise. So if you can start with the first episode of a given doctor.
And that's what was so great about 11th Hour is it was almost like a fresh start completely for the series.
It really was. Yeah. I mean new doctor, new companions, new showrunners. Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. Whereas, you know, like David Tennant's first one, it's, you know, he's crashing the TARDIS.
He's from his regenerative half of it.
And he sleeps through it. Yeah. And then, you know, with the 12th Doctor, he doesn't know who he is half the time in it and everything. And so, and you have Madame Vastra, Jenny, and Strax chasing after him through London. And whatever that companion's name, who we're not mentioning, Clara. So it's okay.
But that one you had to, like, yeah. I mean, that one actually kind of predicated on you knowing a little bit more about the previous Doctor to really enhance that one, I think. So that didn't feel like as fresh of a start. But, you know, you have to start somewhere.
You even had to have the 11th Doctor in that episode calling Clara to, you know, tell him to give him the guy a chance.
Yeah, that was weird.
That was weird. And then Jodie's first episode, you know, it's awesome because that's also almost like a brand new start. And it was fun, but you had that guy with the tooth face, Tim Shaw.
Yes, he showed up again.
Yes.
Yep.
So
spoilers.
So ha ha ha. Okay. Yeah. So yeah, I would definitely either recommend the 11th Hour or I would recommend Rose for the new series. You know, for classic series, I probably would recommend either Spearhead from Space and start with the third Doctor.
Yeah.
Because that's the first one that's all color, and or Robot.
Robot.
Both the great thing with Tom's era and also with John Pertwee's era is all the episodes are there. If you go earlier, you don't have that.
True.
And everything. So, and come on, growing up on PBS, they showed Tom's era over and over and over again.
We loved it.
Yep. It was awesome. So yeah, those would probably be my suggestions. I think Mike and Mary pretty much agree with that.
Mm-hmm. Start and I think
an unearthly child and then just work your way through.
Exactly. We know
you should do a podcast like that.
I will say, I think every Doctor Who fan needs to watch Unearthly Child. Like, they just have, like, you have to do your homework and watch that first story.
Exactly. And, you know, you just find out, because most of the time you get an affinity with that, whoever is your first Doctor.
Sure. I'm not saying you're going to love it, but no. I think you owe it to the franchise, you know, to do that, where it all started.
The only first Doctor story, Doctor regeneration story I wouldn't recommend would be Twin Dilemma. Don't go there. Don't go there. Sorry for Colin fans out there, but no. Okay. Back to the letter. Another favorite is Robot of Sherwood with Peter Capaldi, largely for the scene in which the Doctor and Robin cooperatively kick the key for their cell and restraints down a drain, the floor drain. The line about how Clara must never know of it is priceless. While I love the Doctors, Matt Smith will probably be always be his favorite because the last thing I can recall my late dad saying clearly before his first stroke was when he pointed to the at the TV screen and said, "That guy you've been watching all day, there's something about him. He seems really trustworthy. I'd like to have a cup of coffee with him." Oh, that's awesome.
Aww.
That is really awesome. Yeah. That is a great memory. That's a good feeling. I have only one other Doctor Who experience with my family so far. My nephew Jeb, who was adopted from Zambia, watched some of the last year's Christmas marathon of BBC America while we were all gathered for our biannual extended family Christmas. I'd like to hear about your experience with friends and family and Doctor Who. I'm guessing your listeners would love ideas of how to introduce people successfully. I know that most important things to keep in mind is never to force it at all. If they're obviously disinterested, then let them go. If they ever change their minds, it has to happen in their time. Well, stay safe. I will need to head off to sleep, Bill L. Thank you, Bill. That was an awesome letter.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Bill.
Thank you. That was great. And I've talked multiple times on this podcast and also back on Earth Station One about how I introduced William to Doctor Who. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just I think we started with Rose and together, and we watched it all the caught up with Doctor Who, because in the States back then, Doctor Who wasn't shown live, you know, at the same time. It was like at least almost a year behind sometimes, especially when Rose came out with the Night Doctor. So it was, I think, not until halfway through David Tennant's era were we even getting it at the close to the same time.
I think it's great that they're so accessible, way more accessible now than they ever have been. I do think it's kind of a shame that the classic era is on a separate streaming service than the what we would like to call New Who, simply because it just creates that divide still of mm-hmm. classic and New Who stories. And I wish people could just, like, you know, it's one big, huge franchise. It should be available, like, in one streaming service, you know, like available, like, so that if you're watching, like, the Zygons in a new story, you can go back easily and be like, oh, I want to see the first episode where they were introduced. Boom. And it's just that simple, rather than, oh, I got to pay for another streaming service, you know, that kind of thing. So, you know, obviously it depends on the person, if you're going to introduce or reintroduce someone to Doctor Who, just like anything else. And just like anything else, the worst thing you can do is tell somebody, you have to see this. You're going to love it, because that is the, like,
that's the kiss of death. Yeah,
it really is.
You know,
that's too much expectations on that, you know?
Oh, very much so. And, like, for Judy, I got her into Doctor Who. The very first episode I showed her was Blink. And that was a Dr. Light story.
Sure. It's but a great episode, though.
But she was hooked from that point on.
Sure.
And everything, which is pretty awesome. So, yeah, different people, different eras, and it's pretty awesome if you can watch it as a family. And I know so many people that do. It's pretty cool. So definitely, you know, I think it was a great topic to talk about, and it's a great thing. And, Bill, thank you so much. And if anyone else wants to write us, of course, earthstationwho@esonetwork.com. Definitely would love to hear from you. So let's go wrap up this episode for this week. Want to thank our regulars for being here. Mary, thank you.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. Always fun to talk to you guys.
And anything you want to promote?
You can find me at maryogle.com or on Etsy at evisionarts.
That is awesome. And Mr. Mike?
As always, it's my pleasure.
It is always great to talk to you guys. I love talking Doctor Who with you guys. It's some of the funnest time of my week. So it's always a great, great thing to do. So we'll be back again next time. Please join us, and we will see you then. Take it easy, folks. peace, and stay safe. And we're out of here. Off to the TARDIS.
Quick, to the TARDIS pole.
Da-da-da-da-da. And the door opens.
You have been listening to Earth Station Who, a bi-weekly pop culture podcast dedicated to all things Doctor Who, featuring talent from across the universe. All topics on the show are the sole opinions of the individual and are used for entertainment value alone. You can subscribe to our podcast up on iTunes, Stitcher, or follow our blog at www.esopodcast.com. You can also follow us up on Facebook, Twitter, or Google+. If you enjoyed the show, please leave feedback up on iTunes.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.